I'm going to hand you over to Andy now to give us our second address this evening, entitled Daniel's Fourth Vision. Over to you, Andy.
Thank you. It might have been better to call the first talk Ancient History and this talk Modern News, because what we're going to be doing is bringing it bang, bang up to date. Just as the angel did, the angel was talking about Antioch's Epiphanes, which he lived, give or take 2,200 years ago. And yet the vision in the second vision and this fourth vision leaped from that time ago right up to the time of the end. We read it, didn't we, in verse 35, when it says, a time of the end. It's a time yet appointed. And then there's suddenly this king who does all of these things. And then we read it again in verse 40 of Daniel 11, at the time of the end. The king of the south pushes at this, whoever this king is. Now, there's just one thing, before we start getting it bang up to date, there's just one thing I want to try and explain quickly. Because you might think, I was a bit sneaky because I've dropped in there the word Russia. You know, up until now, looking at the Seleucid Empire and where the Seleucids ruled and where Antiochus Epiphanes ruled, he did not rule in Russia or that, you know, super north territory. His base was Syria. So why have we just snuck in this Russian concept? Where does that come from? I just want to very quickly do this because this isn't an Ezekiel 38 talk. But I just want to quickly show you this, if you'll allow me to, very quickly. Here are the famous verses that I'm sure we all know very well from Ezekiel 38. And it's talking about a man called Gog. And Gog rules the land of Magog. He's the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. And God says, prophesy against this man. I don't like this man called Gog, says God. And I'm going to turn you back, he says. I'm going to put hooks in your jaws. I'm going to bring you forth and all of your army and horses and horsemen and so on. And there's going to be some other nations with you, like Persia and Ethiopia and Libya. And they're going to come from the north, it says in verse 6. And in the latter years, and that literally means in the last days, you're going to come into the land that is brought back from the sword, is gathered out of many people against the mountains of Israel. That's what Ezekiel 38 says. Now, it doesn't need a rocket scientist to compare what we've just read together in Daniel chapter 11 to Ezekiel 38. I'm pretty certain we could get a 10, 12-year-old doing this exercise. Please compare these two passages, and do you think they're talking about the same event? And they are talking about the same event. The colours line up amazingly. We were just talking, whoever I was talking to during the break, about how God does this. He's putting in different places in the Bible the same event. It's like the Gospels, isn't it? Four Gospels, all talking about the same thing, but they do this, don't they? And when you do that, you get the complete picture. So what we've just read in Daniel 11 is about the time of the end. What we've read over here in Ezekiel 38 is the last days or the latter years. What we read about here is the king of the north in Daniel 11. Over here we read about the north quarters. Over there we read about chariots and horsemen and ships. Over here you talk about an army and horses and horsemen. Over there you talk about entering the glorious land. Over here you read about coming against the mountains of Israel. Over here, you read about the Libyans and the Ethiopians being there. And over here, you read about Ethiopia and Libya and some other nations. It doesn't mean that one's right and one's wrong. It means it's this. You just slot the two together. And what I came to realize was, and why I can't remember the exact point in time when it switched on in my brain, but what I suddenly realized was, and why I hadn't thought of it before, I do not know why, but where you're reading about Gog of the land of Magog, chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, is none other than the king that we've just been reading about in Daniel chapter 11, verses 36 to 39, who exists at the time of the end because the king of the south pushes at him at the time of the end. Can you see how this lines up? So now we know that not only are we looking for last day Antiochus Epiphanes, we now know that it's the same chap as Gog. We also know that it isn't just about Syria, because the description of where he rules is not Syrian territory. This Gogian, this chap called Gog, and by the way, Gog was a real and historical person. He was the king of the Magogites. They just called them Gog, like an Egyptian called somebody a pharaoh. If you ruled Magog, they think, oh, let's call him Gog. Seems a good name. Means all puffed up like a mountain. Fine. So where is he ruling? Well, we're told in lots of different places, you can go and find this out, that Meshech and Tubal are areas of northern Russia up there. You can see them on the map, and you can read if you want to about how Moscow itself, they reckon, comes from the form of Meshech, and that name got transposed into the capital city. And Magog itself was southern Russia, and remarkably, into eastern Ukraine. I've done other talks on this that you might have seen. If you look at a map of Ukraine, that the eastern southern part of Ukraine was part of the ancient territory of Magog. Isn't that amazing? So the very bit of land that Putin is taking in Ukraine is exactly the same as the territory that was once part of Magog. It was a little bit on the edge. And do you know something? If you went to Ukraine and went to the bit that he's taking over right now, they speak Russian predominantly. Whereas if you go over the bit of the bit that he's annexed, they stop speaking Russian, they speak Ukrainian. It's almost like the land hasn't been divided up quite right. And Putin's taking back the Russian speakers, but regardless of whether they want to. So what we're being told is that's why on this slide here, I put, if we're looking for a last day Antiochus Epiphanes, because he's also Gog, it's definitely got to be in the Magog, Meshech, Tubal territory, i.e. Russia. And I would suggest that he's also got a lot to do with Syria. Would you as well, if we're looking for Antiochus Epiphanes, the latter day one? He controls Syria. Seems to make sense that this latter day Antiochus Epiphanes will also do the same thing. Oh, let me just go back one slide. So remember, what we're looking for is a stern face, fierce countenance sort of man. Well, you could say, well, there's lots of people that look like that. Completely wicked. You could say there's a lot of people that are wicked. Master of intrigue, prospers through deceit, causes huge devastation, is a proud man, worships military, worships gold and silver and precious gifts. He's got to rule Russia. The latter day Gog obviously is a Russian ruler, but probably also something to do with Syria as well. He works in a stronghold. I'll show you where all these bits are that we've read. He attempts to annex land, because the original Antiochus Epiphanes tried to annex land, but was stopped from doing so by the might of the Roman army. But because of that, he then gets furious and thinks, right, I'm going to go and take it out on somebody. I'll tell you where I'm going to go. I'm going to go to Israel. And he stopped them worshipping and killed many, many Jews. We know the latter day Antiochus Epiphanes stands against Jesus Christ himself and is ultimately killed by the power of God. So we've got to find somebody that ticks all the boxes, do you think? And here is the ancient Antiochus Epiphanes. And what I'm going to suggest to you is that the time of the end Antiochus Epiphanes is Vladimir Putin. Now, just to put something out there, because lots of people say to me, what if Vladimir Putin drops down dead tomorrow? You're shot to pieces, aren't you? You basically pack up and go home. But here's the thing. If Vladimir Putin did die tomorrow, somebody shot him, or he just whatever happened to him, God would have to raise somebody up that still ticks all these same boxes, hasn't he? And could God do that? Well, yes, he could. So I would then just look for the next one. But isn't it amazing, as we go through now, we've got somebody on planet Earth that ticks every box. So I'm hardly going to stand here and say, well, he ticks every single box. And I would say uniquely in all history, there's nobody like Antioch Epiphanes until what we see happening now. So why am I going to disregard this man who at the time of the end is looking exactly like the man that we're looking for? I would say, beyond all reasonable doubt, I'm going to try and prove to you that this is the man. And the secret has been revealed at the end of time, because we can see it playing out before our very eyes. Remember we said that the original Antioch Epiphanes was a Syrian, really. Even though he's got a huge, big territory out into what we would now call Iran, and across there slightly, he was Syrian, ultimately. So one of the things that I've been looking at over the years is, I wonder if Russia will ever make a move south towards Syria. If we're talking about Russia, and the leader of Russia at the minute is Putin, are we looking for any moves of Russia moving into the ancient Seleucid area itself? And we don't have to go back too far, do we, to find out that he did. Because in the year 2015, if you remember, the Syrian civil war had been going on for some time by this point, out the blue, this happened.
There are several reasons why Vladimir Putin decided to enter the Syrian war. Putin's action was a shock to the world community. He had been supporting for years President Assad, but almost it appeared overnight, Russia took several actions, sending in a very large amount of military equipment to Syria, air attacks on ISIL, and then finally sending cruise missiles into Syria. This is a deft and very bold move by President Putin to show that he is a player, that he and his country have to be reckoned with.
Can you hear it all right? It seems a bit quiet to me, but I don't know if we maxed out in volume or does it give us feedback? It just seems quiet. But look, back in 2015, that's when that's taken from. Out the blue, Putin is making a move into Syria. But that isn't on the news so much anymore, but have a look at this.
Since Russia began its direct involvement in the Syrian war in 2015, Russia's achieved virtually all of its primary strategic objectives, including preventing the collapse of the Assad regime, limiting U.S. involvement in Syria, and retaking all of the major population centers from rebel control. After retaking Aleppo in 2016, the Russians systematically retook cities over the next 4 years: Homs, Deir ez-Zor, the suburbs of Damascus, Daraa, leaving Idlib as the final major area.
Not only have they done that, they've set up a major port in Syria, got warships there, they've got much of their army based down in Syria. Really, Assad, who is the president of Syria, exists purely now as a puppet of Russia. Because if Russia withdrew its support, Syria would just end instantly, right? Because they've got no ability to counteract all the rebels that are still in amongst them without Russia backing them. So Putin effectively has taken over control of that area. Now, here's an interesting thing. The Bible talks about something happening in Syria, which hasn't happened yet, but is going to happen. And by the end of this, I'll show you where this slots into the story. Because in Isaiah chapter 17, verse 1, it says, "The burden of Damascus, behold, Damascus is taken away from being a city, it shall be a ruinous heap." And if you go onto Wikipedia and type in Damascus, it tells you that Damascus is the oldest continuously inhabited city on planet Earth. That's what it says. And the funny thing is, they're right, because Damascus has never, ever, ever been destroyed. Even with all the turmoil of the war in 2015 and a bit previous and a bit beyond. Never has Damascus totally come to an end as a city, and God says it will. And it isn't just Isaiah 17 that says Damascus is going to be destroyed. It actually says in Jeremiah 49, this message concerning Damascus. It talks about Damascus becoming feeble, all her people turning to flee. This is verse 24. Fear, anguish and pain have gripped her as they grip a woman in labor. The famous city, a city of joy, will be forsaken. Her young men will fall in the streets and die. In that day, her soldiers will all be killed, says the Lord of Heaven's armies, and I will set a fire to the walls of Damascus that will burn up the palaces of Ben-Hadad. And during, you know, the conflict that we've seen in recent years, you know, we've actually had headlines that mirror Jeremiah 49 there. People are going to turn to flee. Syrians fleeing Damascus after years of avoiding war, but we haven't reached the point of utter destruction. You see where it says down here that the walls of Damascus are going to be burn at the palaces of Ben-Hadad. Who was Ben-Hadad? Well, Ben-Hadad, if you look this up, Ben-Hadad is actually a name that was given to all the kings of Syria. So when it says Ben-Hadad, it's really a title for anybody ruling Syria. So what we're being told is that one day Damascus is going to be destroyed. Not only that, but all the army in Syria is also going to be obliterated in one single day. There's going to be so much destruction coming on the land of Syria, to the extent that the palace of the king, the ruler of Syria, is also going to be destroyed. So who is right now the ruler of Syria? I know I said Putin's like the master over the country at the moment, but who is the ruler of Syria?
That's right.
Assad. Do you know where he lives? Have you ever seen a picture of where he lives? This is where he lives. This is in Damascus. This is a hill. Pretty much all of it has been scraped down the side, as you can see, because it's a fortress, really. It is a palace. That's where he lives. You only get into it through tunnels that are heavily guarded with lifts that go up. It's an impregnable place, and that's where he hangs out, because, of course, like with all dictators, they're super scared of being killed. So he very rarely ventures out of this place. But we've just read in Jeremiah 49 that the palace of the ruler of Syria, this is going to happen to it. It's going to get burned up. You see, what is going to happen is that there is going to be a conflict over Syria that is going to bring Syria to an end as a functioning nation. We're told that in Isaiah 17. So it says Damascus is going to come to an end. And then it says the 45 towns of northern Israel will also be destroyed. This is in Isaiah 17. The royal power of Damascus is going to end. In that day, Israel's glory will grow dim, because Israel's been involved in this conflict with Syria. Its robust body will waste away. The whole land will look like a grain field. But there's a great conflict coming involving Syria. Clearly that hasn't started, but we can see the rumblings of Syria, can't we, going on right now, and Russia coming down. And what I'm suggesting to you is this, that there is the current Seleucid ruler, who I believe will come to a cataclysmic end, and at that point, that's when this chap becomes the true king of the north, because I'm going to show you in a minute when Putin is going to come down. He will come into the void that's been left. There is basically going to be a huge void left into the Middle East, and this is when really he puts on the mantle of Antiochus Epiphanes. He comes out of his place at the far north and literally will come into the territory of Syria, into the void. And there's verses that say exactly that. And I've got a little booklet I'm going to read from to you a little bit later on that was printed in 1866 that says exactly what I'm just telling you now, which I found the other day. Now, one of the things, let's get on and talk about Putin, okay? So I've told you the end before the beginning, really. But let's talk about Putin. And why is he this Gog, Latter-day Antiochus Epiphanes, Latter-day King of the North. Well, one of the first things we're told about him, that he's a man of fierce countenance. Well, there could be quite a few people that look like, have a fierce countenance, but he definitely ticks that box, doesn't he? He's the sort of person that does look like an aggressor. He's not got a nice smiley face. He's got one of those fierce countenances. In the same chapter, Isaiah chapter 17, look at this. It says, this is at the end of the chapter that talks about Damascus coming to an end and the nation coming to an end of Syria. It says, listen, this is Isaiah 17 verse 12. The armies of many nations roar like the roaring of the sea. Hear the thunder of the mighty forces as they rush forward like the thundering waves. Who do you think these armies are that enter the void that's left in Syria? These mighty armies that are coming in, there is the description of the power from the north coming in. And as I say, I'll read you from that booklet in just a little bit later on so you can see where it all fits in. So look, stern face, fierce, completely wicked. We've got the list of things. What I want to do now is go through some of these things. In fact, I'm going to try and go through all of them. We're going to watch some video clips, right? Pretty much in relation to all these bullet points. To prove that we're here at the time of the end.
A minute, I'll turn it off.
Oh, we've got somebody that needs to go on mute. Okay. Okay. One of the things that we are told about this last day Antiochus Epiphanes is that, and we read this, and this is in Daniel chapter 8, it says, and his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. In other words, this man has somehow come to power, but not through his own power. Do you see what that's saying? Do you realise that Vladimir Putin was picked out of total obscurity? Nobody knew Vladimir Putin before. And in 1999, the president of Russia, who was Boris Yeltsin, picked this man out of complete obscurity, made him his prime minister. And on the very last day of the millennium, on the 31st of December 1999, when the world was having a party, Boris Yeltsin surprised the entire planet by resigning and said, I am making Vladimir Putin the president of Russia. This complete nobody, it wasn't even a high-ranking official. He worked in the KGB in Germany, but he was picked out of nowhere, and this happened.
After years of fevered speculation about what would come after Boris Yeltsin, it all ended like this. Thank you very much, Vladimir Putin said, casually accepting the leadership of the world's largest country. The transfer of the secure briefcase containing the nuclear button and control of Russia's strategic arsenal came next. Boris Yeltsin is master of the dramatic surprise. He used his traditional New Year address to drop his greatest and last bombshell. And in the poignant final moments of the reign of Tsar Boris, perhaps this is his greatest gift to Russia, that the long-awaited transition, when it finally came, was low-key, informal, and smoother than anyone he had dared imagine.
Wasn't his own power, was it? He was just handed it, the nation, the largest nation on the planet, he was handed the power. As soon as he sort of comes into power, we started seeing what this man was like. And he launched three horrendous wars, causing unbelievable amounts of devastation. Because what did we read that this man would do? He would cause astounding devastation.
Vladimir Putin uses the same tactics in every war he wages. Understanding what he's done before can help us predict Russia's next moves in Ukraine. This is how Putin fights. Putin's army has been killing civilians for years. Chechnya in 1999, Georgia 2008, Syria, and now Ukraine. Many believe this isn't just collateral damage. These attacks are by design.
It's intentional bombing. They're attacking civilian targets.
It's a tactic designed to drive as many people out of the camp.
Causes astounding devastation. And this is what we've been warned at the moment, isn't it? That he is very likely to cause even more astounding devastation in Ukraine. Because he doesn't care about people. Anyway, we'll get on to that a little bit later. But he definitely ticks the box, doesn't he, for causing astounding devastation. We're also told in Daniel chapter 8, that he prospers through deceit. That's exactly what it says. He prospers through deceit. We might say he prospers through corruption. This was Panorama a few years ago.
He's the world leader accused of personally approving murder on the streets of London.
The conclusion that the Russian state was probably involved in the murder of Mr. Litvinenko is deeply disturbing.
But is the president implicated in an assassination also responsible for theft on an extraordinary scale?
He has fleets of things that almost no billionaire in the West would have.
Vladimir Putin has been accused of looting his own country.
Today, Putin behaves like a czar.
Tonight, we investigate the truth about President Putin's riches.
Why would it be kept secret?
Because it belongs personally to Putin, not to the state.
And for the first time, the Americans say what they really think about the Russian president.
Is Vladimir Putin corrupt?
In our view, yes.
Do you think he's prospered through deceit and through corruption? I think absolutely he ticks that box. Has he magnified himself in his heart? Well, Gorbachev, who only died a few weeks ago, no ceremony for this man when he died. Mikhail Gorbachev, who was, of course, the person that invented glasnost and perestroika, that was bringing the West on side with Russia and Russia on side with the West. You know, isn't that remarkable that he's just died at this very point in time? The symbol, if you like, of East and West working together has died. He said only recently that Vladimir Putin views himself as second only to God. He definitely has magnified himself in his heart. We're also told in Daniel chapter 11 that we read that he worships the God of forces, or the word means munitions.
See if we can get this. World War II Victory Day speech, he had a new message for his troops.
This as Ukraine endures Russia's relentless assault. Let's go to our senior foreign correspondent, Ian Pannell, who's there again in Ukraine for us. Good morning, Ian.
Yeah, good morning, Robin. Vladimir Putin, as you say, he's just given this much-anticipated Victory Day speech in Moscow in front of thousands of Russian troops. I think in many ways it was more remarkable for what he didn't say than what he did, because there was no doubling down here. There wasn't a mass mobilization of civilians into the army. There wasn't a declaration of war. Instead, what he tried to do was use the success, the victory against the Nazis in the past, to try and justify the war today.
This morning, a massive military parade in Red Square, with Vladimir Putin rallying his troops and the country behind the war in Ukraine.
Hurrah!
The parade commemorates the anniversary of the Soviet victory over the Nazis, but Putin using a war of necessity to justify a war of choice, accusing America, NATO and Kyiv of provoking the war. He had a message to his troops and militias in Ukraine, saying, "You're fighting for the motherland, for its future, so no one forgets the lessons of the Second World War, so there's no place for Nazis in the world." But with so many troops tied up in Ukraine, this...
I think we've got the idea with that, haven't we? So he definitely worships the God of forces. And we might say his forces are struggling, and they are. But he's got many, many more weapons, as we know, that he can use. Another thing we're told in Daniel 11 is that this king, who exists at the time of the end, related back all the way to the last day Antiochus Epiphanes, worships gold and silver. And one of the modern versions says expensive gifts. It says in the AV, it says he worships gold, silver, precious stones, and pleasant things. But it does mean things like expensive gifts. This is a man that is worshipping things, wealth and gold and expensive things.
On the shore of the Black Sea, it can only be described as a palace, 190,000 square feet. From the air, you can see the church, tea house, and amphitheater, and reportedly an underground hockey rink, with a no-fly zone and a no-boat zone. This, according to an investigation last year, by the jailed Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny's group. They claim that this gilded, luxurious palace, fit for a king, was built for Vladimir Putin.
This palace is very much a symbol and a miniature of Putin's Russia. He no longer sees himself as a government employee, as an elected figure. He sees himself as a tsar, as a king.
Interesting, isn't it? The king will do according to his will. This king is going to worship gold, silver, expensive gifts. That's exactly what he's doing. The other interesting thing it says in Daniel 11, have a look in your version, see what it says, but in my verse 39 of Daniel 11, it says, thus shall he do in the most strongholds. That word do is literally the word to work. In fact, it's often translated as work in the Old Testament. So what it's really saying is that this king is going to work in the most strongholds. I don't know whether you know this, but the Kremlin itself is a Russian word that means stronghold or citadel. He is the only person on the planet that works in anything called a stronghold. Nobody else. You look at where they work in palaces or number 10 or whatever where they want to work, but nobody else on the planet works in something called a stronghold apart from him. So God says, I'll even tell you where he's going to work. And he works in a stronghold. We're also told, if you have a look in verse 39, it says, at the end, it says that he will cause them to rule over many and divide the land for a gain. A modern version puts it like this: he will honor those who submit to him, appointing them to positions of authority, and divides the land among them as their reward. That's word for word from the New Living Translation, what it says. So he honors those who submit to him, appoints them to positions of authority, and divides the land among them as their reward. Have a watch of this.
The men closest to Putin have been with him for years. They were with him here in St. Petersburg, and they stayed with him ever since. And this is the group that he trusts and that he rewards. And this is the group that runs Russia.
Putin's lawyer at the town hall became president and then prime minister of Russia. His former deputy also served as prime minister. The chief of staff at the town hall now runs Russia's anti-drugs agency. His former assistant now runs the biggest oil company in the world. And his former economist now runs the biggest gas company in the world. For those who've been in Putin's circle, the benefits have been immense. A cellist who is godfather to Putin's daughter has a valuable stake in a major Russian bank. A neighbor has an even bigger stake. Another neighbor ended up running the railways. A childhood friend has made a fortune from government contracts. And his brother has made even more. The Americans say this is how Putin's Russia works.
So does that sound exactly like the Bible says? It's amazing, isn't it? He's going to reward those who submit to him. He's going to divide the land among them as their gain. And that's exactly what he's done. Do you remember when we were talking about Antiochus Epiphanes? They called him Antiochus Epimenes. They said he's mad. He's absolutely, completely lost his marbles, they said to this chap that lived 2,200 years ago.
The stakes in Ukraine could not be higher. With the Russian military making direct attacks on civilian targets like apartment buildings, and given Vladimir Putin's apparent willingness to escalate, Russian experts are now speculating about his mental state.
Has Putin gone crazy? Is he losing his grip on his sanity?
Evaluating Vladimir Putin's state of mind, a top priority now.
The Russian leader could be completely off his rocker.
Some people say he has cancer, and some people say he has brain fog from COVID.
Even in Russia, citizens are buzzing. The Russian people may be starting to think Putin is insane, goes this headline.
I tell you, I think this guy's nutter.
You think he's just kind of losing it?
Yes, I do.
Putin's mental state is getting late-night laughs.
A growing number of U.S. officials...
I won't play all the jokes, but no. Isn't it amazing? They said Antiochus was mad. People are looking at Putin and saying, has he gone mad? Has his isolation during COVID driven him to some sort of crazy, crazy thinking? The other thing that the ancient Antiochus Epiphanes did, of course, was try to annex other lands. And as we know, that's exactly what Putin is trying to do right now. It's a different land. Antiochus Epiphanes tried to annex Egypt. This man is trying to take back the last piece of Mako that we talked about earlier.
On the 200th day of war, Ukrainians celebrating a surprising victory. Soldiers breaking Russia's military stranglehold on parts of the country and reclaiming territory at lightning speed.
We have to win. And this counteroffensive shows that we can win.
Slava Ukraine!
Ukraine saying its forces have recaptured more villages.
Slava Ukraine!
A total of more than 1,100 square miles since launching the counteroffensive 2 weeks ago, liberating more than 30 settlements, mostly in the northeast.
Now Putin's struggling, isn't he? He tried to take the whole of Ukraine to start with, but was pushed back, and now he's trying to settle with annexing the east and south parts of Ukraine. But you've got to ask yourself, why has he launched the war in Ukraine? I mean, why has he done it? What's been the bugbear for Putin to launch this devastating war? If you remember with the original Antiochus Epiphanes, it was because the Roman Empire was forever moving eastwards. Do you remember the rabbi said that in the article I showed you? So you got the Roman Empire forever moving eastwards, and Antiochus said, I'm going to try and stop it happening, and I'm going to go into Egypt to try and stop it happening. The very same thing has happened, not down in the south, it's happened in Europe. Europe has forever gone east, and really, as we know, Europe is the home of the Roman Empire, isn't it? That's where it all was. And in exactly the same way back then that the Roman Empire was pushing east, it's happened exactly like that in Europe itself. Have a look at this. So the blue is basically the EU and how the EU has grown ever, ever, ever closer to Russia. So Russia is the red. It will probably play it again so you can see. Here's 1952. There's Russia. Look at all the red. That's Russia. And you'll watch in a minute when the USSR collapses where all the red suddenly goes. And the blue keeps getting ever, ever closer to Russia. This is what's wound Putin up. And of course, now it's got to Ukraine, and Ukraine used to be part of the USSR. You know, we sort of forget that. Ukraine was in the USSR. And so all that Putin is seeing is this Roman Empire called the EU get ever closer. And he says, it's on my doorstep. These are Russian-speaking people. And so therefore, I am going to act. It's interesting, isn't it? It's Antiochus Epiphanes playing out again. But just as Antiochus Epiphanes wasn't able to, because the strength was coming back at him from the Roman Empire, nor is Putin able to completely take over Ukraine. And finally, we get to the verse that I think puts us here at the time of the end. Because look in verse 40, in Daniel chapter 11, after the description of this man, and we've gone through all of the things that are in there pretty much. In verse 40, it then says, at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at this man. The king of the south is going to push at this man. So while we know we're at the time of the end, because of all the things that we've been looking at, we've got to find out who the king of the south is in a second, and we're going to find that he's going to push at the king. So the king of the south, whoever that is going to push. And the word push, as we're going to see, is a military provocation. It actually means to gore. It's actually the Hebrew word to gore. So if you look at the word push, it's translated as gore, as in a horned animal with a horn, goring you. Not very nice. So the king of the south is goring the king. It's like stabbing him, like with a horn. It's painful. That's why I tend to translate this as military provocation. The push is a military provocation. So at the time of the end, the king of the south militarily provokes Vladimir Putin, who's the king of verse 36 to 39. That's exactly what we're being told here. So all we've got to do now is decode the king of the south. And the way you decode the king of the south is exactly the same way as we decoded finding out who Putin is ruling. Which chapter did we go to find out where the king was actually ruling in the last days? Where did we go? What told us that he rules Russia? Ezekiel 38. Ezekiel 38 told us about Magog, Meshech, Tubal. And in the same chapter, it tells us who the opposing force is to Vladimir Putin. And the opposing force, and this is a big subject, and there's tons of Christelfing talks on this, so I'm not going to do it justice in one slide. But we're told in Ezekiel 38 that Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish and the young lions are going to be the opposing force to Gog when he comes down. Sheba and Dedan is definitely the area of Saudi Arabia, and Tarshish is Britain, and the young lions are the offspring of Britain, like America, like Canada, like Australia, like New Zealand. And the reason that they're called the King of the South, because you might say, Andy, I'm not brilliant at geography maybe, but even I know that Britain and America are not south of Israel. You know, how are they King of the South? They're King of the South because look at all their bases. They base themselves in Saudi Arabia. All of these are bases that we, the UK and America, have put into the very territory that God said we would. So we're lined up in the south down here in Saudi Arabia. So you see where you've got Qatar, US forces, Bahrain, UK forces, Kuwait, UK forces, Saudi Arabia, UK forces and US forces. And so it goes on, all based south of Israel. So what we're being told is, go back to Daniel 11 verse 40. It says, at the time of the end, the king of the south. So you might say, well, is that Saudi Arabia? Is it Britain? Is it America? It's got to be something to do with either Saudi Arabia, Britain or America, or maybe Canada. Where's Mark? So you're involved. You're involved as well. Who is the most powerful out of that list of nations? Saudi Arabia, America, Britain, Canada. Don't say Canada because we're not going to believe you. America, isn't it? America's the strongest. So if I'm putting this is basically Daniel 11, verse 40, exactly as I see it in image. Because what God has said to Daniel through the angel Gabriel is that the king of the south is going to gore, I've said that's the same as military provocation, against the king, who is Gog, who is the latter-day Antiochus Epiphanes. That's what's going to happen. There's a military provocation. There's a push against him. Would anybody like to be gored like that? Is that going to be a pleasant afternoon? I don't think so. This is unpleasant. Does that kill him? No. Is it painful? Yes. So I have my little antennae out looking for headlines that talk about UK, US pushing at Putin or Russia. From that, you see why I'm thinking that? And lo and behold, what do I find? These are all in the last few weeks or a couple of months. Putin says US and UK were behind Black Sea provocation. So the word provocation is similar to this word push. UK sends 6,000 more missiles to Ukraine in Johnson push to keep flame of freedom alive. Push Russia out of the whole of Ukraine, says Truss. Russia-Ukraine tensions. Putin says that the US wants to push Russia into war. Do you think this is all just coincidence, just all made up? It just happens to be somebody that's exactly like Latter-day Antiochus Epiphanes. Just happens to be the King of the South militarily provoking. Do you think this is all just a game? Do you think this is just all coincidence? Or is God's hand behind all of this?
For the Russian military in Ukraine, it's become a fearsome adversary.
Well, these are the next generation light anti-tank weapon, or NLAW as they're known. They're a shoulder-mounted portable fire-and-forget missile with a range of up to 800 metres. Now, the UK has supplied 2,000 of these to the Ukrainian forces, and it's these that are proving so effective against Russian armour.
That's how it started. And then, of course, we thought, well, Russia's still moving in, so we just upgrade what we sent to the Ukrainians, and now it looks like this.
Tipping the balance on the battlefield in Ukraine's favour.
These British weapons are vital for Ukraine, giving troops the ability to hit valuable Russian targets at a distance with precision.
Incredible, isn't it? Do you think this is like Putin being gored about having a military provocation? Do you think he sits there and thinks this is fine? Or do you think this is absolutely winding him up?
The Biden administration sending a new $625 million military package to Ukraine. It includes 16 howitzers and 4 high-mobility artillery rocket systems, or HIMARS. According to the Associated Press, this is the first time the U.S. has sent more HIMARS to Ukraine since July. The weapons have been crucial to Ukrainian forces as their blitz continues to gain momentum. Today, Ukrainian troops pressed deeper into Russian-controlled territories on the southern and eastern fronts. Russian soldiers struggling to hang on to 4 regions that Putin illegally annexed last week.
So you see what's happening. But I want to show you something really interesting, because you might say to yourself, wait a minute, all this is happening in Ukraine. How is Israel ever going to get involved in this? You know, how is Russia, who's struggling in Ukraine, ever going to suddenly switch tack and end up coming south into Israel? It's a good question, isn't it? I'll show you what happens, what I think happens from looking at these words. So there we are on the screen. Look, at the time of the end, the king of the south pushes at him, and the him is the king that's come before that we've been looking at, all that description, yeah? But notice then, it says it's the king of the north that comes against the king of the south, like a whirlwind. So suddenly it doesn't say the king anymore, it says he's now the king of the north. When do you think Putin takes on the mantle of the king of the north? He's only the king up until this point, but suddenly he becomes the king of the north. When do you think he might get the mantle of the king of the north? When he comes down into Damascus, when he's actually in the area of Syria. So somewhere between this provocation that I've just shown you that's underway right now, and it could get worse, supposing Putin blows up a dam or drops a nuclear bomb, do you think that our response would push him even more? Probably. But we're definitely pushing at him now. But this little bit here, the mantle of the king of the north gets put on Putin when he is in Syria. In other words, when Syria has been destroyed as a nation. And I'm going to show you where that happens, because it's in this verse as well. And this is the detail of scripture, which is amazing. You see, do you notice this little colon here? You see that little colon? That is a mind-blowingly important little colon. The Masoretic text that has been used to copy into the original King James Version that we read, you'll see a little colon in modern versions. Some of them don't put it in. But in the King James Version, which has come out, the original Masoretic text, there was and is a colon in the text. And a colon denotes a pause in time. There is a slight pause in time. I don't know how long it is, but that colon denotes a time gap. In other words, after the push of Putin by the King of the South, there is some pause. And then the King of the North is transformed into the King of the North because he's now in Syria. Now, let me just show you what the actual text looks like in the Masoretic text. This is exactly what it looks like. All that Hebrew. That is Daniel 11 verse 40. See the red bit there? There's the colon in the original Masoretic text. Where did the Masoretic text come from? It came from ancient Jewish scrolls. They would have copied it. The colons were there. The pause is there. You see, what I think happens is simply this. That in this pause, Ukraine itself has somehow been resolved to the point of some type of standoff. Putin is not going to fight two wars at once. There's not a nation on earth that wants to do that. The Ukraine situation has got to come to some reconciliation or some sort of standoff. When that happens, Putin's eyes can turn southwards, and we know it's going to turn southwards because events have still got to happen in Syria. Are you with me on this? So in this pause, we've got some sort of resolution. What I think could happen is something like this. Putin brings Ukraine to its knees to some extent by either dropping some type of nuclear weapon or failing that, some chemical weapon, or failing that, blowing up that dam. A hydroelectric dam that apparently they've mined, which would kill thousands of people. What Putin will probably do is say, you're going to have to negotiate with me because I'll show you that I would destroy the whole of Ukraine if you don't stop it. So then there is some sort of agreement made between Putin, Russia and Ukraine, some standoff. I'm not saying anybody's happy about this, they're definitely not, but there's some standoff. And during this time, we've also got what I call the inner ring war taking place. So this is what happens. There is an initial inner ring war that happens around Israel before Russia comes down. Zechariah 12 tells you about that. Psalm 83 tells you about that. And Isaiah 17 tells you about that. It's an inner ring war that happens around Israel. It happens in that little colon. It happens in the gap. That is exactly what's going to happen. And we're told that there's a war between Israel and Syria and the Palestinians and Hezbollah and Islamic Jihad and quite a lot of these nations that are surrounding and peoples that surround Israel. And there is a great conflagration around Israel, and Israel, we're told, wins. Israel overcomes that war. All this has got to happen. Israel wins that war, but in so doing has completely wiped Syria off the map. Damascus is destroyed at this point. That's when all of this happens. Which is why, you know, in Ezekiel 38 verse 8, and we've read this many times, this is a modern version, but it's a good translation. It says, a long time from now, you, Gog, Russia, will be called into action. In the distant future, you will swoop down on the land of Israel, which will be enjoying peace after recovering from war, and after its people have returned from many lands to the mountains of Israel. You and your allies, a vast and awesome army, will roll down on them like a storm and cover the land like a cloud. So what's going to happen is, Israel is enjoying peace after recovering from war. Which war do you think they're recovering from? It's the war that has happened, the inner ring war that happens soon in and around Israel. They win. They remove what Ezekiel calls the pricking briars, all those thorns in their side. They're all gone. Hezbollah, Hamas, Palestinians, all gone. That's how bad the war will be. Syria, its arch enemy, is destroyed. But into that void come Russia, straight into the land that was originally the land of Antiochus Epiphanes, because the only way you get through into Israel is coming into Syria. Why does he do that? Why does he come into the void? It's because of the push, partly. He's been pushed and aggravated by the West over here that have fired weapons and stopped him taking Ukraine as he wanted to, and this has absolutely wound him up. And now there's another war that's taken place in the Middle East, and now he says, what I'm going to do is descend back in Isaiah 17, that we looked at, the armies of many nations roar like the roaring of the sea, hear the thunder of the mighty forces as they rush forward like the thundering waves. This is the King of the North coming down. Remember I told you about this little booklet? I found this by my bed. I don't know actually where on earth it came from. But it was originally printed in 1866. This little booklet here was printed in 1866. And the version I've somehow got hold of was printed by the Chris Alfin Publishing Office in 1940. Right? So how old is that? This is about 80 years old or whatever it is. But in 1866, and I took a photograph on my camera this afternoon, and in a chapter that's entitled Tumultuous Nations at Evening Time, it says that the rush of the roaring host of the nations, talking about this chapter 17, the rush of the roaring host of the nations is to Jerusalem under the King of the North, who at the time is Lord of Syria and Damascus, holding all that country against his enemies. Well, well, well. 1866, they wrote that. I don't even know where this came from. I literally found it in the third drawer down by the side of my bed. I say, and where did this come from? I don't know. He must have picked it up from somewhere. I said, this is interesting. And then I suddenly read that. It's amazing. It's the King of the North coming down in fury. Now, the other reason we know he comes down, I've very nearly finished, is Ezekiel 38 says, you're going to think an evil thought, Mr. Putin, Gog. You're going to say, I'm going to go and take a spoil. Now, why do you think he might think that? Do you think Putin is aggravated to the slightest with all of his oil and gas being shut off by Europe? Do you think he's sort of feeling okay about that, or do you think that's wound him up? It's wound him up. Germany, France, UK, Eastern European countries are switching off gas and oil and have got plans to completely switch off Russia. Do you think they're going to turn around next year and say, oh, don't worry, Putin, after all, you're a nice guy. We'll put it all back on again. They're not going to. So he's lost an enormous amount of revenue. But guess what's happening at the same time? Israel has found enormous gas supplies, the Leviathan gas fields and more. In fact, they're the largest gas finds that have been found anywhere in the world in the last 20 or so years, just off the coast of Israel. What Israel is now doing is pumping the gas into Egypt, and Egypt then pumps the gas, guess where, into Europe. So now Israel is able to resupply some of the lost gas back into Europe, the very gas that Putin was getting before. Now, do you think that's aggravation? Just have a quick look. Very, very nearly finished. If you have a look in verse 43 of Daniel 11, when the King of the North comes down like a whirlwind in verse 40, it says in verse 41 that he enters into the glorious land. Where do you think the glorious land is? Israel. Many countries will be overthrown. There's some countries there, Edom and Moab and the children of Ammon, that he doesn't bother with. He bypasses those. He stretches forth his hand in verse 42 upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. And he will have power over the treasures of gold and silver and over all the precious things of Egypt. Why is he interested in Israel and Egypt? Because of this.
Israel, Egypt, and the European Union have signed a natural gas export deal on Wednesday during a regional energy conference in Cairo. The deal will, for the first time, allow significant exports of Israeli gas to Europe, according to the Israeli Ministry of Energy. Officials have said that they expect the Israeli gas will be sent to liquefaction plants in Egypt and then shipped north to the European market. Minister of Energy Karine El-Harar said this is a great moment in which tiny Israel turns into a significant player in the global energy market. President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, addressed the importance of the agreement in light of Europe's search for alternatives to its historic reliance on Russian oil and gas.
Isn't that just the same thing? Russia comes to take a spoil. And he will come and take a spoil. We're told in Daniel chapter 8, verse 24, that he will destroy powerful leaders and devastate the holy people, just like the original Antioch Epiphanes came up from Egypt and went into Israel and destroyed so many people living in Israel. This man is going to do the same thing. In Daniel 11, verse 40, we're told that he will invade various lands and sweep through them like a flood. He will enter the glorious land of Israel, and many nations will fall. In Ezekiel 38, verse 8, it says, a long time from now, you will be called into action. In the distant future, which we're in right now, you will swoop down on the land of Israel, which will be enjoying peace after recovering from war and after its people have returned from many lands to the mountains of Israel. He's going to come down. He will come down after the initial inner ring war. But what happens to this man? It actually says, in Ezekiel 38, verse 22, God says, I will punish you and your armies with disease and bloodshed. I will send torrential rain, hailstones, fire, and burning sulfur. This is the end of the king of the north on the mountains of Israel. In Daniel 11, verse 45 that we had read, it says he will plant the glorious holy mountain. He will stop between the glorious holy mountain and the sea and will pitch his royal tents. But while he is there, his time will suddenly run out and no one will help him. In Daniel chapter 8, verse 25, it says he will destroy many and take his stand against the prince of princes, yet he will be destroyed, but not by human power. This man is going to come to some cataclysmic end, exactly like the original Antioch Epiphanes apparently died through some supernatural end. That's what's going to happen with Vladimir Putin. And as we've said all along, if it isn't Vladimir Putin, who ticks every single solitary line and every single solitary box of ancient Antioch Epiphanes, Gog himself, ruling the territory, doing all the things, and even having the character, I mean, he even looks the same. How crazy is that? It's as if God has said, I'll even make him look the same. If there are any doubts whatsoever, I'm going to make him look the same. And the thing is, there is a giant gap that God knew between these two characters, and only God could join two people together. And why has he done that? He's done it, surely, so that we know we are at the time of the end. But why did he want us to know we're at the time of the end? Well, this is the exhortation, surely. It's so that we wake up. It's so that we're sat on the edge of our seats. It's that we are looking up. It's so that we're trimming our lamps. It's so that we're not worried about where we go on holiday. We're not worried about COVID. We're not worried about who the next prime minister is of this country, because it could be anybody in 2 weeks or even next week. Or do you realise if you're age 7 now, you've had 5 prime ministers? It's ridiculous. But don't you even feel the UK is the mother of all parliaments, apparently. It's the beacon of democracy. And yet all the wheels feel like they're coming spinning off, don't they? And turmoil is there. What we're witnessing are the final days of the kingdom of men. And it's all happening at the same time everything I've shown you is happening. Do you think that's a coincidence? Or do you think we're on the verge of Jesus coming back? And a lot of the things we talked about, the inner ring war, you know, something happening in Ukraine to reach a stalemate. Iran launching its and activating its proxy armies around Israel to start a conflict there and the destruction of Damascus. Do you think that's going to take years? Or could all that happen very quickly? That colon is a short period of time. And it could all happen quickly. And Jesus could come back at any point, couldn't he, from here on in? If Putin dies, God has got to replace him with somebody exactly ticking all these boxes. And maybe that is true. But as I'm stood here, and maybe as you're sat there, and as people listening in on Zoom, surely there's a lot of evidence to suggest that this man is the man. And the secrets have finally been revealed to us in these very, very last days. In fact, at the time of the end.